Info motherfucking Astastic Nomicon Radio.
Because it is info, and you got your nom and your icons.
This is Pixel Fiend. Listen to Info Nomicon.
Okay, the other day I got an instant message from a guy who has a radio show, and he said, "Hey, Droops, I want you to be on my college radio station." And I said, "Awesome, can we record it and use it as an episode of Empanomicon?" And he said, "Hell yeah." So here's episode 47 of Empanomicon. And if you're a longtime listener and you paid any attention to the intro music to the show, you'll say, "Holy shit, is Obfuscated coming back?" And oh yes, he is. Stay tuned.
What's up?
What's going on, buddy?
What's up? All right, K-Rad audience, I'm talking on the phone with Droops from Mississippi. He's an old-school phone freak of some kind. I've just started watching his shows on Infonomicon TV, sort of a combination of redneck meets hacker or something like that. So what's the deal, man? What's up?
Nothing, buddy. I don't really like phones. I'm a computer guy.
Oh, okay.
And, the Redneck Show was just for publicity. The rest of them were actually informative.
That was goddamn funny, man. That was hilarious.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Tell your friends.
Yeah, the hunting for access points with a gun. Never done that before.
Well, we have never done it either. Just that one time. So this is a college radio station, huh?
Yeah, theoretically.
And where is it located at?
This is in Williamsburg, Virginia. Let's see, it's the College of William & Mary, and we've got, like, one antenna on the roof of one of the buildings here, Phi Beta Kappa, and I'm not sure, that one's a pretty crappy one, actually, like, that can barely get into some of the dorms, but overall, like, that one's got about maybe a 6 or 7 mile radius. Then there's a microwave link to literally, like, a big, huge transmitter, across the river in the middle of the woods in sort of a redneck town, Charles City. And so I think it's a total of 30,000 watts or something like that.
Is that anywhere near Fort Union?
Fort Union? Fort Eustis?
Fort Union?
Fort Eustis. It's near to Fort Eustis.
Okay.
I don't know.
I have a friend that goes to school in Fort Union or Fort Union or something like that.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. It's a military school there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe you were a good kid and you didn't get threatened.
I was encouraged, but I declined to join, like, massive organized crime and institutions such as the military.
Well, my parents said when I was in 10th grade, if I didn't straighten up, I was going to go to military school.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my mom some choice words and ended up in military school for 5 years.
Oh, damn.
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Really? So is that how you became the ninja hacker that you are today?
Kinda. I'm just some guy in Mississippi.
Word.
They let me have electricity because I was smart. So, do people know about Infonomicon here?
No clue.
No clue?
No, they don't know nothing about nothing. They have no idea. No idea.
Well,
nothing.
I have this internet TV show and radio show. It's called Infonomicon. It's at infonomicon.org. And I pretty much complain a lot on the radio show as it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I have solutions to problems a lot of the times, but I complain a lot. And we talk about computers and Linux and security and privacy and good things like that.
Hell yeah.
Go ahead.
I enjoyed the hack into the K6 box.
Oh, yeah. It's a beast.
Yeah, those K6s are beasts. Definitely. I think that that's basically my hacking these days would be, Nmap and security focus. That's the extent of my elite hacking.
Well, that thing was running Slack 7.2, I want to say, which came out in like 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So there were lots of good vulnerabilities for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm a Slackware user myself.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm definitely not going to change my system ever. I'm definitely hooked on Slackware. But if I were to get a new computer, but I never will, at least not anytime soon, I probably would go with something like possibly maybe Gentoo, or if OpenSUSE gets really awesome or something like that. But
speaking of SUSE, I had some extra money the other day, and I bought an AMD 64-bit processor.
Oh, damn. I don't like that because it's better than what I have.
It's much better than anything I've ever had. Like, I still use my Commodore for gaming, so I'm not really like an intense computer user.
Yeah.
But I bought it just because I had some extra money, and I was going to put Gentoo on it, and I just haven't had the time yet. I went and bought SUSE at Best Buy for $100. It's well worth $100. It's a bunch of DVDs.
The 9.3?
Books. Huh?
9.3? 9.3. Yeah, I'm really impressed by 9.3, yeah.
And it is very, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I installed SUSE 9.3 for an engineering firm around here, and it was the first time I've ever messed with SUSE, but I'd been reading some of the guys at Novell have blogs, and they're, like, real badasses. They have a bunch of pictures of them wearing foam hats around the office and, like, you know, getting drunk and everything else. I think it's... You know, it says, like, this is not an official, you know, opinion of Novell or anything like that. But, damn, those guys are really smart and really fun guys. So they were talking a lot of cool stuff about SUSE 9.3. And it has Dbus and iNotify and Beagle and all the beta boy stuff in there. And I installed it for... I installed it for the engineering firm around here, and it was just impressive. The installer was beautiful. It was simple. It was straightforward.
Yast is awesome.
Yeah, Yast is awesome. Like, that's definitely the best, Linux administration GUI I've ever seen. And I think it's gonna get better and better. And they just, like, I installed the one you just download, which I actually called up them and asked them what the difference is between the evaluation and the one you buy. And they just said that after 30 days, you're not allowed to have access to the package updates and repository or whatever.
And they also have some stuff they pay for, like they have the full version of RealPlayer and stuff on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That you don't get by just downloading it from the website.
Well, this is for a server, so, you know, it's not even going to have a monitor hooked to it after I was done with it anyways. But, at any rate, I just saw, like, you know, a week and a half later that the SUSE, you know, they're renaming it to OpenSUSE, and the access to the repository will now be free to anyone. So that's cool.
I was glad to give them my money.
Yeah, I definitely told the guys there to go out and buy a copy. I'm not sure if they've done that yet, but they said they were. But they're already a Novell shop. They've been a NetWare shop forever. So hopefully they'll really like this, you know, new Linux infiltration and be moving off of I think they're on NetWare 6, which is pretty old school at this date, but it's better than running, you know, a Windows server of some kind. And So I was talking to him for quite some time about, you know, different things, and it's looking like, you know, depending on how good if the next version, I think that one of the things Novell is hinging on as far as their old NetWare customers is if the next version of Open Enterprise Server is good or not. If it's really good, then Novell is doing great. If it's not real good, that's bad. I do know that Novell just got some big government contracts, so, you know, theoretically they're looking good. So I think Novell is definitely the best Linux for the enterprise by far.
Well, they do have the name for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll help them a lot. And they do have a good Linux product, so that'll also help. But usually the people making the decisions go more for the name than for the abilities of the software.
Yeah.
Hence why Microsoft has money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were talking to me about how, like, AutoCAD, which just... I thought AutoCAD was really advanced or something, even though I hadn't used it in years. But apparently they just 6 months ago removed the last, like, 16-bit, you know, library files from it. And apparently AutoCAD, they're real in bed with Microsoft. Like, and Intel as well, to the point of AutoCAD will have like corruptions that it doesn't have on it will have corruptions and other problems and stability problems on AMD processors, but not on Intel processors because of some kind of like, you know, certain way that they compile it and like use processor features and whatnot. And they're definitely a Windows only thing. So, I mean, if you're, and that's one of the silliest things in the world, like hold up people from using desktop Linux. One of the main things I've seen is QuickBooks because there's just no way to run QuickBooks through Wine or anything like that. But AutoCAD's the same way. I don't know if you can run AutoCAD through Wine or not, but it's not something that enterprise users would be willing to do, I don't think. So go figure.
I'm sorry, I was talking to my neighbor.
Word. I was just talking about some stupid crap anyways. It's just not even, no one was excited about it. Everybody was just pissed off. I was starting to turn up the music to drown my own self out.
Awesome. Is there music playing right now?
Yeah, there's a little music playing in the background. It's a Autechre remix.
Excellent.
Yeah. So yeah, you can't hear it, but we sound cool when there's music in the background. It's just, it totally covers those pauses. Like, great.
Well, I'm excited to listen to this. We're working on revitalizing our school's Linux users group.
Uh-huh.
And we're trying to think of some cool ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
To like make people at the college say, "Hey, there's an alternative."
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have come up with a free/open source software CD that's nothing but Windows applications.
Yeah, like the Open CD?
Yeah, very much like the Open CD, but we did it our own version.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that'll help, I guess, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, my computer crashed. And we're like, oh, you have to buy all this crap again. Mm-hmm. Here is OpenOffice.
Yeah.
It is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. It's definitely the way to go.
And every time your teacher says, "I don't care what format you turn your paper in," when you have to email the paper to them,
mm-hmm.
OpenOffice is the way to go. They'll just give you a good grade because they won't be able to read it.
Yeah, well, you can. I mean, you can always save to PDF or whatnot with OpenOffice.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
fun.
And
you can save to PDFs. So you have to pay PDFs. So you don't have to pay like $300.
Yeah,
you can just go right ahead and do it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm like sort of beginning to work on is I've been hanging around the XMS2 mailing list and chat room and everything,
mm-hmm.
basically trying to push my own personal agenda on the developers, which is actually worked out pretty well for both of us because my agenda and their agenda line up pretty well. But my goal with that is to maybe build a sort of, not necessarily a Linux distribution that's ready to go, but definitely like a, because I mean, I don't have the time for that, but like an overall like how-to and guide and how to configure things and whatnot to use XMS2 as several different things, one of them being for DJing live or just over the radio.
Ooh.
Also for just like right now, the College Station here, they use Winamp and Shoutcast to basically, mm-hmm. whenever somebody's not in the studio, just play random tracks. And, you know, that works well. But, you know, I think the next generation solution will be involving XMS2 in combination with Jack, which is also an incredible program. And XMS2 is really early in development, but, I mean, it's extremely impressive. It's definitely... you know, it's something where you could have that basic program, like that basic XMS2 infrastructure, and build a program that has the exact interface of Winamp or the exact interface of iTunes and have more functionality. And you have, you know, command line interfaces, web interfaces, and everything else. I actually today, I'm kind of going on and on here about it, but anyways, I built a XML RPC server in Ruby for XMS2, so I could control it. I actually have I built another page in PHP, so I can send XML RPC requests to it. So I basically just built a little web page where I can, you know, move the next track and play and pause and stuff like that. But over the next few days, I'm trying to build that into a PlayStation Portable program. So you have an XMS2 remote control. I think somebody's already done that with Winamp, but you know, I don't run Winamp, so.
I've got a Windows server that holds all my media,
mm-hmm.
and we have WWW Winamp
mm-hmm.
running all the time, so we can control it with the PDA or from the other computers in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a really crappy web interface from, like, 98, but it works really good.
Yeah, the whole XMS2 thing is nothing like XMS1. It's built on a completely like client server architecture, so mm-hmm. you have a daemon basically that you know doesn't do anything, and then you connect to it with any number of clients: web client, curses client, command line client, you know, whatever, multiple clients if you want. Visualizations are a client too. And all of this works over the network as well. So you could have, you know, a networked computer doing visualizations in OpenGL or what have you. So it's a pretty, it's definitely going to do everything I want it to do. And I'm real interested in getting involved with that right now.
That's awesome. You always talk about stuff like this on your show?
Sometimes. Ironically, today is one of the first days in, like, I do a show every Tuesday night. Well, you've got an alarm going off there. What are you, breaking into something? You hacking?
No, I was just getting into my car.
Oh, okay.
My car beeps a lot.
Usually it's sort of more like back and forth banter among morons. I get people to call in.
That's what it is now, right?
This is actually sort of technical and kind of accurate.
You did say Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby is the ultimate language. It's the best language ever made. It's beautiful. Oh, man, Ruby's great.
Awesome. We're working on some Perl right now. We're writing in IRC bot.
Uh-huh.
Or not that there's not a million of those.
Yeah.
But just so we can learn Perl syntax.
Perl is deadly. I actually wrote and this turned out so ghetto, but I have an Ajax chat room on my website that I made, and actually that came out fairly non-ghetto and looks cool and works good. And I wanted to, like, I've got basically two kinds of people that go to my website. The kind of people that know everything about computers and run IRC clients on their PCs and whatnot. And then the kind of people that, like, their greatest, you know, achievement ever was signing up for MySpace. And they have no idea what IRC is or anything, but they can use the Ajax chat room. So I wanted to interface the Ajax chat room with IRC. But damn, did I come up with some ghetto stuff. I was trying to do it as a IRSSI plugin, and I got that to work in one direction because that's based on a little callback interface. You just basically make subroutines, I guess, as you call them in Perl, and then assign those subroutines to callbacks. And so it was really easy to make that one do a little post to a PHP file every time there's something said in the chat room. But there's the timer interface or whatever for IRSSI plugins doesn't work right to pull stuff from the web page in the right order. So I ended up with writing a IRC. I implemented the IRC, like a small amount of the IRC protocol in a Perl script that basically just used the IO sockets module. And the one thing I did learn from this, all this ghetto-ness, was how to use fork in Perl, which is beautiful. You just basically, you know, you just say fork, and then you have two loops, one that's like the child and one that's the parent. But overall, it never ended up working very well, and I just scrapped it because I wasted too much time and really didn't care anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Perl is definitely like... Like, compared to something like Ruby, the language is sort of more beautiful, I guess you'd say, than Perl. But Perl has definitely got, like, it's definitely the easiest thing to, like, basically hack someone with, because you just, you know, just keep writing lines and just, like, you know, I don't know, the way the regular expressions work, and you can just, like, sort of, and the whole, like, $_variable that just comes to you, and it's just like, it's so hackish, and you can just like blast right through something. Like, if you needed to, like, if you want to build some, you know, something that breaks through somebody's, you know, PHP vulnerability, you know, you can automate it pretty quickly with Perl. That's my use of Perl personally. Otherwise than that, I find it a little bit hard to maintain, because once you just get too many lines there, everything's everywhere.
Obviously, you've seen my code.
I have not seen your code. Yeah.
What are you majoring in college, buddy?
Not in college, actually.
You're not?
No.
You're just on the college radio station.
Yeah, yeah. just on the college radio station. Yeah, it's open to members of the community, so technically I'm not, you know, violating any of their policies or whatnot. Ironically, though, everyone at the station thinks I'm a student, so, you know, depending on, and I wasn't feeling especially clever tonight, so I didn't go into something telling you I was a student and, you know, majoring in dinosaurs or something, but
okay.
Sometimes I just tell people stuff like that and it works out.
Well, I'm majoring in business and computers at school, and we have to do a lot of code for the computer part.
They do that in Mississippi?
Yeah, they do that. Hmm. Except they, instead of calling it CIS, they call it MIS for Mississippi Information Systems. They tell you it's for Management Information Systems, but it's funny how they don't do that everywhere else.
I have a GED, actually, so go figure.
Well, buddy, I've been in college for like 8 years.
Damn.
So, and like, I'm still working on that bachelor's. I got my associates in 2 years, and then the rest of it's just been the last two.
Yeah, well, I live in this college town, so I basically get the benefits of going to college without actually going. I go to the whatever interesting parties that I can find out about. I've had this show for about 9 months now on the radio station, I might sit on a few classes or something like that if I feel like it. I haven't done so yet, but, you know, whatever.
Awesome.
They've got some pretty, like, pretentious courses here as far as computers, like in the master's and graduate level, like compiler design and parallel computing.
Ooh.
And stuff like that. You know, it's funny, though, because I always hear that, and I'm, like, kind of intimidated. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could ever really, you know, design a compiler or something like that. I mean, I've made little mini template languages in PHP and stuff, but, you know, a compiler, that's pretty hardcore. But then I hear about these master's degree computer science guys that, you know, they go to a job interview, and they ask them, what's an array? And they can't even tell you. So I don't know what's going on there. College is strange. I mean, certainly, it's certainly possible to get real smart in college, but it's not always the case.
Well, the way I like to think about it is there's a lot of people that go to college and they get out and they go get a job. And those are people that went to college to make more money. And then there's people that go to college and just stay there forever.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't even have to go to it. You just be around it. And learn things. And like audit classes or just, I don't know, shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going there to learn. You're not going there to make a lot of money one day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do a lot of gratis work on computers for people that are poor.
Yeah.
I live in a really poor area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing that because I'm trying to make money. I'm doing that just because I like doing that.
Yeah, that's cool. I find myself doing the same thing. I just do it for the fun.
Yeah.
I really like to learn. I'm not much of a schoolboy, but I do love to learn.
Yeah, I hate going to class. Like, I can't do that.
I would like to take a programming class or something like that, but I haven't really pushed the issue yet, so I haven't done so. But there's a lot of math prerequisites, which I obviously don't have, so I've got to, you know, talk to the professors and all that, but I don't know if I'm too late for the fall semester or not yet.
Well, that's awesome, buddy. I'm not really good at math either.
Yeah, I actually failed Algebra 1, and then I took it again during the summer and passed by, like, a hair, and then failed Algebra 2, and then took that again over the summer and failed it again.
Yeah.
So it's funny. I'm a pretty good coder, I'd like to think. I can't really do math, but see, all the programs that I deal with, I mean, since I'm mainly doing web development, I'm really only, like, adding one to a number or, like, seeing if one number is bigger than the other. I mean,
yeah.
That's pretty much it. I'm not really doing anything too hardcore, unless it comes to dates, in which case the built-in functionality of the languages usually save my ass.
Awesome. You got to work your way around it, buddy. Oh. Well, I'm riding around in my wife's convertible right now.
Hell yeah.
Smoking a cigarette, having a good time.
Word. How's the weather down there?
It's a beautiful day. It's hot as shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been... I here's the question of the day right here. For me, I'm 21, and definitely this summer has been, like the hottest summer I've ever experienced in my life. Like there's, it's just like, it's just 5 to 10 degrees, like over the line or something. Like I've been in hot summers before. Virginia's no joke when it comes to summer. It's very humid here, especially. It doesn't get as hot as it gets in some other places, but it does get extremely humid and hot at the same time, which can be probably more stressful on the human body and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the winter here really sucked ass, and it was very depressing, and I kind of still was like, I'm cold until about a month ago. Damn, over the last month, it's been like super hot or something, like some global warming action or something is going on. I don't know. I'm kind
of
suspicious.
I do a lot of stuff out in the woods.
Yeah.
Like I'm an avid geocacher.
Uh-huh.
People don't know what that is. It's people with GPSs. They find a neat spot and they hide like a little weatherproof box with a log in it, like a notebook and a
yeah.
pencil. And, they put the GPS coordinates on the internet and people go find it and say, oh, this is such a neat spot. And they sign their name.
Yeah, I've heard of that before. I've seen that. I don't have a GPS myself, so I never actually did anything. But yeah, I've seen that before, and I actually saw that there was a lot of people that do that in this area even.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
That's cool. Do you ever find pot in those little boxes or anything or what?
No, people. There's the forums, of course, obviously for this shit,
uh-huh.
and people talk about the stuff they find. Mm-hmm. And somebody in around New Orleans had found one of these in a park mm-hmm. and decided that would be an awesome toilet.
Oh, man.
And then somebody's, like, 9-year-old kid found it, and they let the kid open it, and then there's this human waste in it. And
that's
that was really
terrible.
Nice.
God. That's terrible. I don't want to find that. God.
But we do a lot of stuff with cemeteries and such, and I'm trying to get a grant right now that they'll give me, like, a thing that'll image what's in the ground. I'm trying
uh-huh.
to think the name of it right now. I had some wine. I can't remember names.
Wow.
But I'd like to... There's a lot of old cemeteries. Like, the Civil War was really big here,
mm-hmm.
obviously, in Mississippi. And, like, there would be a town that's no longer a town because it was wiped out during the Civil War and they just never rebuilt it.
Yeah.
Like, all the men died and there was just a bunch of women and they moved somewhere else where there was men around. And, you know, like, no one has taken care of these graveyards for the last 100 years, and there's a lot of tombstones missing or broken. And it'd be really fun to just image the ground and see how many people are actually buried there.
Hmm. So you can see bones and stuff with this?
You can see metal.
Uh-huh.
And you can see cavities. So if it's like a... They didn't just stuff them in the ground. If they're actually in a box, there's a cavity of some sort.
Uh-huh.
And if you find a cavity that's 6 feet long, it's pretty much a grave.
Wow, that's kind of disturbing. I'm not interested in that at all, in a way, but I'm glad you are.
Well, it's really interesting, and I'm into shit like that. I don't go to funerals, but I spend a lot of time in graveyards.
Yeah, graveyards can be interesting once in a while. There's a couple good ones around here. We used to, you know, chill in late at night just for a while, just to go walk around at night and do that.
Yeah. And I do a lot of night stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, night stuff is good.
Night stuff is fun. Well, let's talk about something else.
All right.
I want to talk for a minute.
All right.
I want to say, because I'm actually on radio,
mm-hmm.
that there's this awesome internet radio show called the Linux Link Tech Show. And this show is podcasted, I believe, right?
Yeah, I've heard of the Linux Link, but I've only listened to Lug Radio.
Okay. Well, these are like the opposite of Lug Radio. These
mm-hmm.
guys are irreverent, and they cuss, and they drink beer, and it's just a bunch of guys having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not all that serious all the time, and that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them wrote a thing called Bash Potter, which is IRC client. The Shell podcast client.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I use it myself. 30 lines or something? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 30 lines.
Hell yeah.
And the guy that hosts that show wrote that, and he was actually in the July issue of Linux Pro Magazine.
Hell yeah.
They mentioned his name and the program. They talked about it a lot.
Hell
but
yeah.
But that's really awesome, and I just wanted to say that on Real Radio.
Yeah, this is cool because, I mean, I've never actually got to talk to anybody on the air about Linux that knew anything about it at all, like more than, you know, what I've told them. Yeah. But yeah, for real, like if there's one person or like, you know, half of a person or half of a thought out there that's listening and you're interested in Linux and open source and hacking and all that kind of stuff, the Lug Radio is pretty funny and hilarious. I don't believe they drink on the show, but they do talk about drinking a lot and all that other stuff. The Linux Link Tech Show, I've never listened to that. I think I heard some other Linux show, but it was like some guy talking very maybe that was linuxquestions.org or something like that.
Yeah, that guy's really boring.
Yeah, don't listen
to
that one.
Very informative, very boring.
Yeah. I've been to, there's this thing around here, TWUG, Tidewater Unix Users Group. It's been around for like 15 years. It's like an hour away from here. Went there a couple times and it was pretty like, you know, informative, and the guys there were pretty smart. Bunch of straight edge guys though, for the most part, it seemed like. But I guess that, all the different, Linux user groups tend to deviate in personality quite a bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I haven't been there in a couple months because I almost killed myself and a friend by driving into some construction equipment because I wasn't wearing my glasses and I lost them. So haven't got new glasses yet.
Or fixed your car. Did you fix your car?
I didn't hit anything. There was basically like some construction equipment out in the road, and there was a guy standing behind it, and I was heading right for it, and he started running into the regular road because he thought I was going to come through that, and then like I like all of a sudden swerved at the last minute, you know, by you know skin of my teeth, missed everything, and was totally fine, and the guy like jumped back out of the way again, and you know I was going really fast, you know, all of a sudden swerved, and you know not a thing happened, but you know if I didn't swerve, then probably would be dead because it was definitely some Caterpillar equipment and I was definitely going 65 miles an hour, so
yeah. Well, good thing you didn't kill that guy. I bet he still cussed you.
Yeah. Yeah, that would suck. I don't want to do that. I have not driven, you know, at night except for on roads I'm well familiar with since that night. So, but I, even though I haven't got my glasses yet, I definitely learned my lesson on that one. I've almost died many times, but don't want to push it.
So, do you have a credit card?
No, I only use debit.
So you have a debit card.
I have a debit card. Yeah.
Do people ever check your ID?
Once in a while, probably one out of every 15 times I use it, I'd say.
Did you, sign the back of it?
I didn't for a long time, but like a couple months ago, I did grab a permanent marker and sign it, but it's real scribbly and stuff like that. So I don't know. Let me look at it right now. I'll tell you.
Well, I've got a credit card and a debit card, and I wrote on the back of mine, check ID.
Uh-huh.
And, like, one out of 15, one out of 10, they actually check it.
Yeah.
And that really kind of upsets me a lot.
Yeah.
Like, a lot, you hear, you know, credit card fraud and this, that, and the other. There's a lot of this shit, people will just take your wallet and use your credit card.
Yeah, for real.
And I would really appreciate somebody checking that ID on that card. And, I've been really experimenting with this to see who would check it. We went to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, one person in Vegas checked it.
Yeah.
And that's because I wrote check ID on the receipt. And then I went back to the guy and he's like, well, I got to see your ID this time.
On the receipt? That's kind of like,
yeah, that's
funny.
How I sign my receipts also, because that's what my signature looks like on my credit card.
I can tell you what I do is whenever I sign anything, I purposefully just scribble. And I usually scribble below the line. And it's not letters or anything. It's just up and down, up and down. Like it looks just like, you know, like a heartbeat or something.
Yeah.
And I've never had anyone say anything about it. Never.
Well, the other day I was at I bought a book that I thought I had lost and I was reading and I was very upset. So I went and bought another copy. And as soon as I come home with it, of course, you know, it's in plain view.
Damn it.
Even though I, you know, spent a lot of time looking for it. So I went to return that book at Barnes & Noble. And they weren't going to let me return it because my phone number was not in their system.
Mm-hmm.
And I have their little discount card because it saves you money. And they like to track you. And, of course, none of my real information's on it because all those, like, grocery store cards or anything like that, those discount cards.
Yeah.
They sell your information that you're a white male, your birthday, so they know you're 21.
Yeah.
and you live here, and this is what you buy.
Yeah, for real. I have a discount card for the Food Lion and U-Crops around here, both of which I found on the parking lot, on the ground in the parking lot, so it's not hooked to me explicitly.
And they said, well, your phone number's not in here. I was like, well, I don't really need to give you my phone number to return a book.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we can't do that. And then, what is your phone number? I'm like, it's 555-5555. And I got a dirty look, but they typed it in, and the computer accepted it.
Yeah, they're not exactly the sharpest there at Barnes & Noble.
I get in trouble at stores. Like, this morning, I went to pick my wife up at work. And she usually carpools, and she works at night. And when she can't carpool, I like to go pick her up so she doesn't kill herself driving back because she's been up all night.
Yeah.
And I went into Best Buy just kind of as a little prank, and I was moving Windows XP boxes down to the ground and pulling the SUSE boxes and putting up where the XP boxes were.
Hell yeah.
And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm helping y'all out. And they didn't really care for that. But really, who goes into a store like a Best Buy and buys Windows XP on an impulse buy?
Yeah, $300.
Nobody buys that on impulse buy.
No one.
If they're buying it, they went in there to buy it. So if it's on the ground, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
People will buy SUSE Linux as an impulse buy.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, what's this? I can try it out. So it needs to be up where they can sell more copies.
Yeah, for real.
It makes so much sense to me, but the management there didn't seem to like that idea.
Yeah, go figure. Well, I commend you. My own personal idea was to they had basically a whole shelf with just Windows on it. Windows XP and Office, I think, was the other thing they had on the shelf. And you know, Office is like $300 some, $400 some. Windows XP is like $200 for the upgrade and $300 for the full version.
Oh yeah.
I was just gonna go in there, make my own little cardboard stand beforehand, put a bunch of different Linux distributions, you know, in little jewel cases with printed out covers, and just be like, free, take one.
I think I'm just going to tape them to the back of the Windows XP boxes.
Yeah.
That way they'll never know.
Yeah, I would consider such activities possibly software terrorism, which I recently just tried out myself. If you go to my website in Internet Explorer, it first pops up a message that says, you're using Internet Explorer, and that's downright shameful. Go to Mozilla.org and get Firefox or use something else.
Awesome.
Yeah, but this is the terrorism part. After that, it says, a virus has been installed on your lame, insecure Windows machine that will format your hard disk if you don't install another browser within 1 hour. And then they click OK on that, and it takes them right to Mozilla.org. So that's my.
That is freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's my own. I'll give you the script if you want to, you know, try it out in your own site. But
was it PHP?
Yeah, yeah, for real.
Awesome. I can probably write that pretty easy.
Yeah, it's trivial. yeah, it's one of the user agent is in the underscore server super global. I've been running that on there for about maybe 4 or 5 days now, just to see, you know, how many responses I get. Ironically, to my site, I actually have about 80% of my visitors are Firefox, and 20% are Internet Explorer. So,
I have several websites, and I look at the stats. Mm-hmm. And like the one for non-tech stuff is mostly Internet Explorer. But
yeah.
My Infonomicon one is mostly Mozilla or a podcast client.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Internet Explorer is way down the bottom, mm-hmm. And that's really nice. I used to have on my personal webpage. There was a problem with, they fixed it. There was a problem with Internet Explorer. It was one little line of code that would just crash Internet Explorer. And I copied it off of /dot.
Yeah.
And, and that on there. So if you just went to it, there went Internet Explorer. But I didn't want those people looking.
Hell yeah.
And if people don't know what we're talking about, go try Mozilla. It has this thing called tabbed browsing, which the new Internet Explorer 7, which they're not going to give you, they're going to make you buy Vista, which is the new operating system they're coming out with in a couple years.
Yeah, I did a little review on that, actually.
But it has tabbed browsing exactly like Mozilla has it, so it's obviously the correct way of doing it. And it is awesome for looking at porn.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
There's no clicking back anymore. You just open up all these new tabs.
Yeah. Well, I personally recommend the FlashGot Firefox extension. Like if you, what it is if you, say you have like a, say you had a directory index, like a typical Apache directory index of all images, you could just select all that and then right click and click flash got selected and it'll download every link that you've selected.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's definitely the thing right there. Combined with your, you know, your favorite slideshow program or what have you. But yeah, I mean, that's good for a lot of other purposes besides porn downloading. I highly recommend that extension.
There's a lot of really good extensions for Firefox. They're like add-in programs.
Yeah.
That make it better.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you. I'm telling the audience. But I have with Firefox, it has this thing. You can check it. It comes already checked. That'll stop pop-up ads. And I have this other thing. It's called ad block. And if it thinks it's an ad, it just won't show it. And it's really awesome. If you get an ad, you can click a little ad block thing above it and say, this is an ad, and it won't ever show you that ad again. And so I pretty much don't see ads anymore.
Yeah.
Looking at the internet. And that's really bad for people with websites because it costs a lot of money. But I don't like looking at ads.
Yeah. Fuck
the internet is free.
Take back the internet or take back the web. That's one of their mottos or whatnot. And yeah, to get Firefox, just go to rawdod.com with Internet Explorer and it'll redirect you. That's rawdod.com.
Awesome. I have some show notes written out. I was supposed to record my radio show tonight.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to use yours instead.
That would be cool.
Send me that MP3.
Yeah, for real.
And that'll give you some promotion by my people.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the five guys that listen to my show will listen to yours.
Hell, yeah. I'm always looking for five more guys.
Notice how you said guys and I said guys, because there's no women that listen to my radio show.
I've got a few fangirls, actually.
Are you good looking?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I'm married, and I'm not really good looking.
Yeah, well.
But that's how it goes. I listen to a lot of internet media, and it's really surprising the errors that people will make
mm-hmm.
on really simple things. Like, I was listening to Future Tense by John Gordon. Public Radio puts it out. It's a really good show. And they had a guy on there that's has been using Unix or open source or Linux, whatever, for not Linux, but he's been using it now, for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was explaining free software and open source software, and he said they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That open source software is free, and this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that really upsets me, because it's not. There was this guy, Richard Stallman, who came out with open source software. And he didn't really come up with it, he just came up with the term. And it meant when you bought software, you got the source code for it. So if you knew how to program, or you wanted to review it for your company, or wanted to add functionality to it, you could. And if you buy Windows for $300... not open source. You don't get the programming code. You don't even get a book with it that shows how to work it.
Well, hold back for a second. You said Richard Stallman came up with open source. You mean just the reverse, don't you?
What?
Richard Stallman came up with free software.
No. Stallman came up with the term open source.
Really?
He was upset that he bought a printer when they worked at MIT in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And the printer had a problem and it would jam up. Mm-hmm. And they had the code for it. So they wrote a little program that when it jammed up, it would notify them because they were on a different floor and they could go fix it.
Yeah.
They upgraded and they wanted to do the same thing because they found it really handy. And they didn't get the source code this time for the printer.
Mm-hmm.
And other universities had it because they had bought it
mm-hmm.
as a separate thing from the printer. And he thought if he got it, the printer, he bought a printer, he should be able to do whatever he wants with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. If you buy a car, you can do whatever you want with your car. Like, if you want to add a different engine to it, you go right ahead. And so he came up with open source. And free software is just free. You don't have to pay for it. It doesn't have to particularly be open source. There's a lot of free stuff that's not. Like, WinAmp is free, but you don't get the source code for it. So you use XMS
mm-hmm.
or XMMS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I want to talk about. And things like that just really irritate me when people don't use the right terminology. Like piracy, they always talk about, oh, the pirates on the internet stealing stuff. That's copyright infringement. Piracy is when I pull up next to you in my boat and I steal your stuff off your boat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a real big piracy problem in, like, Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of sailing magazines and they have a piracy report.
Yeah.
And that's actual piracy, and that's a serious problem. copyright infringement's not really serious because everyone's still making money.
Yeah.
Like, if they really had a problem with copyright infringement, they weren't making any money, they couldn't afford a lawyer to stop people because they would be broke.
Well, yeah, here at KRAD Radio, we're really big advocates of software and, you know, copyright infringement in general. If you want to infringe on some copyrights, I highly recommend thepiratebay.org.
I was thinking about this, for talking about this on my radio show. I went to eat at a restaurant with my friend. He really likes Louisiana food, and I'm from Louisiana, and he wanted to take me to a Louisiana restaurant. And it was something had to do with New Orleans in the name, and New Orleans is like 6 hours from here. Mm-hmm. So I figured they couldn't mess it up real bad, but they did. Like, their po' boys weren't on French bread, and that's pretty much the definition of po' boy. It's a sandwich on French bread. And like, he got an etouffee, and he's like, I love etouffee, it's really good. And it was like a soup, and I'm sure y'all don't know what that is, but etouffee is like a creamed food on top of rice. There's no juice, really. And it's just sad how people just really will call something whatever and not ever have it right.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I do disagree with your Richard Stallman terminology thing there.
Really?
Yes, I absolutely do. I believe you've dug yourself in a deep hole.
Did I?
Yes, I think you did. Yeah, Richard Stallman is the one who came up with free software. Open source is something that actually didn't come out until around maybe 97, 98 or so. And Richard Stallman is the founder of the Free Software Foundation. And he's a big...
Maybe I'm just talking up my ass then.
Yeah, I think so.
But you do.
I think you're right about the French bread, though.
I am right about the French bread.
Yeah, for real. it's definitely not going to help our, you know, at least the over-the-air listeners too much, but yeah.
You know, I think you're right. I think I am wrong.
You are wrong. I am right.
I'll go with that I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, here's how it goes. Like, Richard Stallman, he came up with free software in, like, 84. And, you know, that's all great. And there's really the goal of his organization, the Free Software Foundation, that he founded...
absolutely right.
In 1984, is to make all software free. And it's a good thing. It's very motivating to people that are interested in computers and hacking and software and all that. Then basically what happened was, he's like, you know, his software is really, really good. And, you know, the people that he inspires that think like a hacker or whatnot do really good and they really like what he has to say. However, his rhetoric and whatnot just doesn't cut it when it comes to like normal people or business people, because they pretty much have, you know, constantly dismissed him as basically a communist. And, you know, in general, his rhetoric just doesn't work with normal people. It only works with people that think like a hacker. So basically they've come up in 97, 98, they came up with a more blanket term called open source, which covers more than what would be called a free license. It just covers pretty much any software that, is free to, get and is something that you can view the source of. Meaning that, like, you know, the BSD license is covered, so you could release, Apache and then modify it and sell it as a proprietary program for $1 million, and you wouldn't have to release the source. But
Apple did with their operating system.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is, you know, the FreeBSD guys that they based off their operating system off, the FreeBSD guys think that OS X is one of their greatest achievements ever. And if they had taken the Linux thing, say if, you know, there was some way that they could take the Linux kernel and all that kind of stuff instead of FreeBSD, you know, the Linux guys would go apeshit over the fact that, you know, they took their code and made it proprietary and all that. That's just, you know, completely unfair. So, you know, as far as, you know, business is concerned, there's a lot of, like, open source, it's the word, covers free software and, you know, other variations on that, which are not technically free, because the thing with Stallman is there's free as in beer, which is something that costs money, but you get for free. But, you know, then there's like free as in speech, where you can speak, you know, whatever way you want on your mind, and that didn't cost you anything, and you can say whatever you want, yada, yada, yada. You know, I'm kind of screwing it up myself a little bit here, But yeah, so his rhetoric was not flying with the normal people, and so they invented more of a more blanket term, open source, that covers a lot of different open source licenses. And they have the Open Source Institute, I believe, OSI, that has all these approved open source licenses. So if you want to release something and call it open source, it has to be under one of their approved licenses. And, you know, they're like a, you know, pretty good organization that, you know, all respect, a lot of respectable corporations are involved with and whatnot. So, you know, I'm all about free software. However, open source is, you know, the better way to get the message out there, because normal people can understand it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So
you win. Well, I'm drinking wine right now.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, there's this wine out of Australia that was real big in wine circles several years ago. And I'm a firm believer of a good bottle of wine doesn't have to cost over $10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot that does,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to. And it's called Yellowtail.
Oh, Yellowtail, yes. I've drank that a couple times. It was enjoyable.
And it's out of Australia. Mm-hmm. And there's a Shiraz, which is a type of grape that only they can make this wine from grapes that grow in Australia. And that was their big thing. That no one ever had Shiraz before. It was a big deal. Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff that has come after that from Australia. It made them kind of a wine area. You don't really think of them as a wine area.
Mm-hmm.
You think like California or like France.
Mm-hmm.
But this is called the Little Penguin. And it's really, really good, and it's got a little penguin on it.
That's cute.
You can get it for like $6.50.
Mm.
And it's very good. They have a Shiraz and a, I don't know how to say, Cabernet Sauvignon, whatever, and a Merlot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all very good.
Everybody loves that penguin. Tucks it up, baby.
And I like to buy things with penguins on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Walmart this year for Christmas had a coffee cup with a little penguin on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it just because it was cute.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But it's very tasty.
Yeah, I was born in Australia.
Were you?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I was only there as a baby, though. I was pretty much raised in the good old USA.
Are you from Virginia? Like, other than that?
Yeah, for the most part. I spent like from when I was like 3 months till I was like three, I was in St. Louis, which I actually remember some of, and ever since I've been living and was raised in Williamsburg, I've traveled some of the world, and but for the most part my home is in Williamsburg until further notice.
We used to go to St. Louis. I used to go to school outside Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go to St. Louis every once in a while.
Yeah, well, I have no idea if it's any good at all. I just remember playing with a kid next door who had an eye patch and lots of Legos.
Awesome. An eye patch and Legos.
Yeah, what more could you ask for as a two-year-old?
That's awesome. I have a dream of just living on a sailboat the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
The whole renewable income thing is kind of hurting me.
Yeah.
But I'd definitely like to have an eye patch.
Well, you know, as for work, I'm mainly a web developer, you know, mainly in PHP and whatnot, and I've done quite a few projects that involve converting some like non-functional, like unreliable Visual Basic interface to an Access database.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually done so for the college here on a couple projects. And the guy who did the you know, unreliable, unusable, undocumented Visual Basic interface to the Access database actually went and became a boat bum in Florida.
Awesome.
Just on a whim and disappeared.
So as soon as I can get this house paid for and like our car paid for,
uh-huh.
I'd like to just sell it.
And yeah.
Raise my kids on a sailboat. It's like... I think that would make them very worldly.
You ever,
like, I've gone to school in Louisiana, Missouri, and Mississippi. And, like, I've traveled a lot. Like, I've been to Europe, and I just got back from Vegas with the DEF CON.
Yeah.
Everything is really different wherever you go.
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, in the United States. Like, there's a lot of subtle differences.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I find most places I go to actually tend to be very similar to my imagination of them, though. Although, like, they're definitely, I'm not, you know, trying to undermine their worth of going there, definitely. Oh, it's definitely an experience you won't have by not going there.
Like, but Vegas gives out porn brochures everywhere. Like, there's, like, You know how, like, there's the boxes for papers you put 50 cents in, you pull it open? And they're free, and you just open it up, and there's, like, pictures of women for you to rent or whatever you do. And it's awesome. But while we were in Vegas, we went and experienced other cultures. Like, we get in a taxi cab, and, of course, they're not all American, because that seems to be a heavily immigrant job. And we'd be like, hey, man, where are you from? And I'm from Morocco. Well, take us to a Moroccan restaurant. And, you know, he would take us to some place that he would eat at.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of authentic.
Yeah.
And we had some really, really good Thai food, and we had some really, really good Moroccan food while we were there.
Oh, yeah.
And some sushi, because we don't have, like, raw fish in Mississippi.
For real?
Like, it's really hard to get good sushi here.
Whoa, so you went to the latest DEF CON. That's that's rad, man. I've never been to a like a hacker convention or anything like that, much less a 2600 meeting.
Well, I started going to these things last year, a little bit later than this. I haven't gone. I've been to three of them, four of them now. And they're definitely very interesting.
Hell,
if you want to see a lot of weird people with computers, go to them.
Sounds like a hell of a lot of fun, honestly. I mean, sounds like a blowout.
Yeah. Some of them are more like for the mature crowd.
Yeah.
And some of them are more for like, we're going to get drunk and break stuff with computers crowd.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun.
I've seen a few videos from DEF CON, like the Spot the Fed contest. That looked really awesome. And just some, you know, random people's, you know, sort of documentaries of just walking around and bullshitting.
See, like, I don't really go to a lot of the talks, but I talk to the people that are there.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot more interesting. Like, the talks are sometimes kind of boring because it's not an hour-long talk that people have, and they have to stretch it.
Yeah.
And it's like you can only talk about this for, you know, a certain amount of time before you're just not saying anything else.
Yeah.
But the people are always a good time. You just get some beers and hang out and do crazy things.
Hell yeah. I mean, I've never really talked to, I mean, not in real life or even over the phone, really with anyone that's, you know, better at me at programming or better than me at Linux, you know, general knowledge or anything like that. So that I'd be blown away to go to some place like that where there's a bunch of people that could, you know, code C in circles around me. You know, I can barely make a menu program in C. I'm just not too good with all those pointers and all that. But, yeah.
One of the people that I did go to the talk of, I don't know if you've heard of Mike Lynn.
No. Nope.
But Mike Lynn is a guy who was doing some work on Cisco routers.
Mm-hmm.
And he found where he could, a vulnerability with a Cisco router where he could actually get a command prompt.
Hell yeah.
Or a shell, whatever you want to call it. Command prompt for you people. Not you, the people that are listening to us. But that's the first one ever. And Cisco, he told them about it before he gave his talk. And he gave a talk on this. And they heavily censored his talk. He had to quit his job. They had handouts for people, and they tore like 25 pages out of the handout that were not allowed for people to see, and just pretty much tried to cover this up. Well, and that's really, really bad for them to cover this up. Because if Mike Lynn can find it, somebody else can find it too.
So, when did the full exploit, was that the information on how to do that released?
Oh, I don't think the complete information on how to do it was released.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure it's out there on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Because other people, of course, saw that and were like, oh, I can figure that out from what he said.
Well, are they released a patch for it yet? Or?
They have.
Uh-huh.
But, as you know, a lot of things don't go patched.
Oh, hell yeah. It takes forever. It depends.
And if Cisco said, we have a vulnerability where people can access, you know, your router and get a shell.
Yeah.
From your router.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, have released a patch for it. People would patch it a lot quicker than they just said, oh, here's another patch.
So this is a full, basically a root shell?
Yes.
So they could theoretically just, you know, have something write to the flash, like, you know, a million times real quick and burn, you know, make the router, you know, useless without, you know, opening it up and
replacing. Or they could take my little local ISP where they have a Cisco router doing stuff and completely own this town.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Yeah. You could get a huge amount of information by just sniffing everything that goes through there. I mean, even I could build a program that would basically, you know, sniff all plain text stuff for passwords and credit cards and everything else. And just like, you know, basically any once the CPU level hits like 97% or something like that, just, you know, don't search anything more than it can. I mean, that's something, you know, you could write in Perl or PHP even, you know, fairly quickly. Sounds like fun. You know, I kind of hope something goes down. It's exciting.
Well, Cisco has really tried to hide this. And they said it's only executable locally.
Uh-huh.
And explain to me how you can be local to a router.
Oh, it's a hell of a lot of trouble. You have to, you know, plug in your serial port or something.
Yeah. Like, no. It can be accessed over the internet. They meant on a local network. Well,
yeah.
You can get on the local network from anywhere on the internet.
Man, like, yeah, if the full exploit code just gets published somewhere, that's going to be wild and wacky. I mean, that'll be a complete fun world for everybody that wants to go out there and cause some trouble.
And he didn't like release this on some underground thing. You know, he said his name is Mike Lynn. He released it at the Black Hat security thing,
uh-huh.
which a lot of government people go to.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of really, really smart computer people go to. So well, it's like, he, you know, he brought it out to the world. And I'm sure that there's other people that knew it before him.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't tell people.
One thing I do know, and I don't know if this is classified or just like need to know or anything like that, but it's, I do know on those, the army uses some kind of, they use some kind of crazy, like old school radar to communicate, like where they bounce signals off of the atmosphere and all this kind of stuff with like radar, and it's like all like, you know, radiation, lots of radiation and like high powered radar and stuff like that. And from what I know, there's Cisco routers in there that do something, although no one I've talked to knows what they do. So, yeah, the Cisco stuff is all over the place. That's everywhere.
So you could, I mean,
that's a national security thing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, for real. Hopefully there's some competent individuals that we don't know about, you know, taking care of what needs to take care of or whatever. But then,
but, like, Cisco's suing this guy, and, like, this girl that gave the talk... wasn't like he's bound by a gag order, like he can't talk about it. I think it's called a gag order.
How is that possible if he quit his job? What can he really do?
They're suing personally him.
Oh, because they're going to sue the hell out of him or something? Or
from what I hear.
Well, damn. I mean, that's whack.
Yeah, that's really, really bad.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd think about that.
And he told them first.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand all that.
Yeah, that's the problem with the whole monolithic model is something like that. You know, they find it internally, and, you know, it's really a really difficult thing to find out if you don't have access to the source code, for example.
Yeah.
Something that, like, you know, people without the source code would never figure out, possibly. Then a lot of times those companies would rather just, you know, not talk about it at all.
So I think that's pretty interesting.
Did you hear about this that new planet that they found that's like 3 times bigger than Pluto and like 3 times farther away?
No.
Well, here's the deal.
It orbits the sun?
Yeah. New planet, for real.
Crazy.
Yeah. And it's, and you know, they've been, I believe it's 3 times the size of Pluto. I could be wrong there. It's, you know, Pluto has been thrown into question as to be actually a planet because it is kind of small, but
yeah.
They haven't really, I don't think they've made a call on that yet officially, because there's no real consensus on to what size is actually becomes a planet rather than just a, you know, a rock. This one researcher or whatever found it and, I guess only told his buds, and, you know, somehow they had this information on some kind of private web server or whatnot, but, a hacker of some kind, got into that and found this information and, you know, emailed the guy and said, if you don't tell everybody about this new planet, because they kept it secret for like a year or something. And he said, if you don't tell people about this planet, I'm going to tell myself. And, he, like the next day, he did the press release and press conference and all that kind of stuff.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really big deal. And there's another guy that was like, the other thing I read about is there was a guy that, he was like a really, I mean, he's some kind of really good hacker, I would think, hacked into a whole bunch of military and government, computer networks and got all on the inside and stuff. And his basic goal was to find out about, UFO.
Oh, I heard about
some
that guy.
Alien technology and all that stuff like that. I guess apparently he didn't find anything, but he did get busted, and I think he's gonna have, you know, I think he's got life in prison or something like that, for, because he's caused like $1 billion in damages because whatever, some kind of infrastructure or whatever was shut down for almost a day, like a couple days or something like that. And
I don't see how they come up with these numbers for things like that.
Yeah, well, I don't know what happened. I think it was something that involved like, you know, a emergency worker communication system or something like that, where like, you know, a couple hundred people were kind of like sitting around twiddling their thumbs for a couple of days while this network was down or something like that. I'm not entirely sure. That's like, the kind of the theme of the show, I guess, is here's some information that's probably, you know, a little bit wrong.
Well, there was a guy named Adrian Lamo who used an account the New York Times had for some database, I forget what the name of it is right now. And they had an unlimited account at this database where they paid X number of dollars a year for unlimited use. And he used it. So technically, it cost them no extra money because they had an unlimited account. But they said he did millions of dollars in usage of this thing, and it was wrong.
This is one of those subscriptions to New York Times Magazine? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think it was the New York Times access to like...
like APY or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, I know they have some sites like National Geographic or something. It's like $1 or $2 to like get an article, but like you pay like $10 to get like access to every single article ever made. So if they're going to sue you, they'll go for the buck an article range.
So like it should just be $10. You'd be like, oh, here's your $10.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
legal stuff is whack, you know. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's not my cup of tea. I tend to try to stay away from organized crime. Namely politics.
Yeah, politics is a bad thing. I call my representatives a lot, my senators and such.
Mm-hmm.
And they never listen to me.
Yeah. I'm more of a believer in hacktivism and whatnot, where, you know, like it's sort of like BitTorrent, you know, like if you want to like have something where, you know, everybody can bootleg whatever they want, you know, you just make it possible and then people do whatever they want. You know, you implement the code and then think about the implications later.
Well, so the way they figure out implications, if you meant it, like Brom Cohen, the guy that came up with BitTorrent, says, you know, he made it to share file, you know, not illegal things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it's heavily used for. I mean, it's really handy for people like us when they release a new version of Linux.
Yeah, for
real. And the more people that download it, the faster it goes. So it's really cool, but it's also really cool for people that copy infringe movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a new movie comes out, everyone's downloading it, and it makes it go faster for them.
Yeah, I really like that.
So they go on intensive things. And they'll take anything out of context. Like, he had a post to his website years and years ago that said something like, screw the MPAA or RIAA, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a joke, he says, and he used it because everyone was talking about that. And he did it, you know, as a humor thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they say, oh, that's intent right there, that you meant to defraud us.
I seem to remember something where he was talking about, like why he designed software or something like that, and it was like, you know, I design software that can, you know, be used for, you know, massive like intellectual property theft and all this stuff like that. So I'm not sure. I guess he's kind of, maybe he's backed off that, maybe not. I do know, I mean, you can go to bittorrent.com now and search and find, you know, bootleg movies right off his own site.
Yeah.
So I don't know, go figure. When it comes down to like normal stuff, you know, politically and all that, I'm pretty much well a moderate in general, and like an extremist on a few issues. Like I just don't believe in intellectual property in general. Like I just don't. Mainly because, you know, I'm kind of whatever left-brained, and I just think that, you know, intellectual property is something that does not exist in nature, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's completely an artificial construct of human beings.
We came up with it.
Yeah. So
in recent times.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how you can expect to make something you know, like you make an album or you make something and expect to be paid, rewarded for it the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like that kind of doesn't really get you to want to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're an awesome painter, I'm going to pay you for your painting, or I'm going to pay you to see your painting, or I'm going to pay to buy a book with your painting in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I want more. I don't just want the one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like if I work at a factory, I wouldn't go there one day expecting I'm going to make 100 parts for a car and be set for life.
Mm-hmm.
I would go there expecting I'm going to make 100 parts of a car, and then tomorrow I'm going to have to go back and make another 100.
Yeah. I think that, like, you know, capitalism and, like, sort of, like, greed thought in general, it definitely gets things done quicker in some cases. For example, like, a lot of proprietary software for whatever DJing, live DJing, and for video editing and all that kind of stuff is just not available as free software. And it has been available for as proprietary software for, you know, 10 years or more. And, you know, there's the motivation of money for these people, like, it worked and the software exists and that's good. And I think that, like, you know, all this, the, for example, oil in general has, like, just made everything explode, like, from, like, 1850 when we first started using oil to now. Like, the rate of, you know, expansion of everything has just been massive. So it's been like a, so that kind of thought, you know, it gets things done quicker. And they're kind of like first to market. Then it hits a limit, like with proprietary software, because they don't have the cool, like, you know, stuff that we have, like where, you know, every little piece is kind of like a little tool that does one thing. And then all of our software just chains those pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I definitely think there's the place of proprietary software has been fulfilled. It's like got us everything that we need to do. And open source in general is just kind of coming over and replacing everything, you know, one by one, if you have, and with things that are more flexible overall, slowly but surely.
Well, something we talked about a minute ago has a really good relevance to this. Without, like, let's say Microsoft is a monopoly and they have Internet Explorer, like mm-hmm. they do. And a long time ago, I used to use Netscape, and then Internet Explorer came out. And then a new Netscape came out, and then a new Internet Explorer came out, and they battled about it,
mm-hmm.
and both products got better.
Yeah.
And then Netscape went away, and Microsoft has been the Internet Explorer version 6 for forever.
Yeah, forever.
They have no competition. Now that Mozilla's coming out, oh shit, we better start working on this Internet Explorer thing again.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think the more competition there is, the better product we get.
Yeah, for real.
Until they get, like, the oil companies, like... The price of gas has obviously gone up where you live, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the price per price per barrel really hasn't gone up all that much.
Yeah.
But if you look at, like, Exxon stock, it is valued a lot higher now.
Yeah. They made...
Why is that? Oh, because they're fucking just taking your money.
Yeah, they are. For real. Well, one thing, one final comment on the whole, like, the whole software thing would be that, you know, technology... tends to make certain practices that previously existed obsolete. Like, for example, if we were ever able to get to the point of having replicators, like in Star Trek or what have you, it would completely eliminate the need for money. There just would not be a need for it. Like, there's just mm-hmm. it would just eliminate that entirely. And, you know, open source and free software is the first kind of thing that kind of can eliminate the need for paying for software. It does something that has just not been possible before. It's sort of like if the ideal government was either really like a libertarian government or a really socialist government, which are very idealistic, but just don't work if the like large majority of people are idiots or whatnot. Like in the United States.
Not motivated.
Yeah. If everybody was really smart and motivated, a totally libertarian or totally socialist government would be great. But it just doesn't work when there's so many idiots out there. Like just like 85% morons.
Well, you obviously work with an idiot somewhere, right?
Yeah, I work for a couple.
And if you got paid the same amount as them, even if you did really, really good stuff and they just were just idiots all the time, would it motivate you to do better, or would it motivate you to just be an idiot?
Yeah, it depends. If I was interested in what I was doing, then I wouldn't care if they sucked. If I wasn't that interested, then I would just try to be as moronic as possible.
Yeah.
So.
So, and like, I see a value of money, and I see a value even like if everything was completely open source free software, I would still see people being paid to develop it.
Yeah, for real.
All the time. Like, if I was a pizza company and I had a really cool idea of delivering pizza and I needed software to do that, mm-hmm. I would pay somebody to write this for me.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't want to share it with my competitors.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. That kind of stuff will be around forever.
So, I mean, obviously you're going to pay people for software development no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, that's a service. The software itself is, you know, if it's out there, then anybody can get to it. And if you just don't give it away, then you have it.
Yeah. So it's not ever going to go away, but I'm fully into, I should be able to turn my computer on and watch DVDs and Linux. Or whatever I want to do. I don't know how far we're going into this, but like 2600 is an organization, and they were sued for putting up the code that would decrypt a DVD so you could play it on Linux or make a copy or do whatever.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And they had it linked to on their site, I believe. I don't even think they actually had it on their site. And maybe they did. But they got sued for it, and on the way to court, in front of the court building, they bought some bootleg movies from a vendor in the street. They brought them to court, and they were like, hey, we didn't really steal anything, but this guy right outside there is selling bootleg copies of the movies. Y'all should probably go after him, and we'll wait in line. And I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of an odd tangent, but whatever. I'm enjoying my penguin wine. So how long does your show go on for, buddy?
Well, I guess we're going to go to like 11:30, possibly midnight. Just depends on, well, I had some people that were supposed to show up, and they were supposed to call to be able to get in the door, but I guess they didn't call, they couldn't call because you're on the phone or something like that. No big deal, though. So I've actually, my truck broke down the way here, so I've actually have to get my father to pick me up because I just moved back in with my parents a week ago. Probably like another half an hour or whatever, but if I'm getting kind of boring here, we can put on a little music for a minute.
I'm excited about the nice long show.
All right, word. I've actually got to take a piss real bad, so I want to play a Front 242 track real quick, and you can stay on the line.
Okay.
With that. All right, here goes. This is, what is this? What is it? I don't know. I think it's Headhunter.
About this one, yeah. About this one,
I believe.
You fucking head hunters.
Chevy.
All right, so that was Front 242 with Headhunter. And that's actually, Front 242 is one of my favorite industrial rock bands or what have you. That song is actually about sort of like a corporate life as a headhunter to like basically, you know, the CEO or some guy in big wig in a corporation goes and gets a headhunter to go find him some kind of special talent for a specific task. So it's industrial corporate rock. Yeah.
Awesome.
So what's up? Yeah, I gotta kind of head out of here in about maybe 15 to 20 minutes or so. So that's approximately the length of the show. If you got, you know, whatever you want to talk about or whatever.
Whatever I want to talk about or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. My my energy drink buzz is kind of wearing thin, so my random topic generator is running a little low. And if I call you a prick, it's, you know, don't take it personally.
That's okay. talk about things. Well, I have a website. It's called podcastincubator.com.
Oh, for real?
And I really enjoy alternative media outlets. And with the internet, with the podcast revolution, as it would be, no, I really don't like the term, a lot of people are going out from the blog sphere or just from whatever and making internet radio shows. And I think it's awesome. Like, I have an iPod, I listen to a lot of this stuff. And I wanted to have a place for people that needed a place to grow. Because the first time you do a radio show, you really are bad. And no matter who you are, it's really bad.
Yeah, for real.
And it takes time to get used to talking all the time. And I'm not really good at it, but I'm a lot better than I was.
Yeah.
So I have this thing. It's the Podcast Incubator. Anybody that wants can email me, and I'll set them up with an account, and they can put their show there. And it's like a family we're trying to make, and everyone helps out. So if somebody's really good at art, and they can do graphics for everybody. And we all help each other out and help with audio quality and making shows better. And it's a free place to host your stuff. I think it's really cool.
Oh, hell yeah. Whenever I hear the word podcasting, I always think of some nerd, you know, sitting at Starbucks drinking a latte and, you know, blogging about how he invented podcasting on his little iMac.
Yeah. Well, the only Apple product I own myself is an iPod,
yeah.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful little device.
Yeah.
And I have some really old Apple computers, but they don't really count.
Yeah,
they're really old.
The iPod has got so much style, it didn't even have a battery latch.
Yeah.
So it's almost a disposable MP3 player. Yeah, but for real, the Apple design is just something that, like, you know, like creative or whatever, you know, like that's like the wrong name for them. Like no one else. I mean, they're industrial designer or whatever you have. I mean, beats the pants out of everything else. Like their machines are so much like, you know, cooler looking and more like, you know, human eye and hand friendly than, except for maybe their mouse, than, you know, most of the stuff out there. They're really like, you know, it's well done stuff. I like it.
I think it's really pretty stuff, and it's very aesthetic looking.
Yeah.
It pleases me to look at it. I don't, like, my laptop is a ThinkPad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ThinkPad is the best laptop ever made.
For real.
That's just because I've dropped it a whole bunch of times and really never been nice to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rugged. And my wife has a iBook, and she's very careful with it, and it's all scratched up.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they made it look pretty.
Yeah, there's always those compromises that they make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really think a lot of that, like Steve Jobs, when he came back to Apple, Apple started making really neat products again. And if you look back at like the Next stuff, it was called Next, the company Steve Jobs started after he left Apple, and their stuff was really, really cool looking also. It helps to have, you know, a guy that's really visionary and artistic, kind of in charge of your company, instead of somebody that's really just worried about the bottom line all the time. Like, Steve Jobs will bet the company on something, and hopefully it turns out good. And a real, true, good business guy would never bet the company on something.
Yeah, for real. I hope their, like, little announcement of the Intel Mac didn't screw them into the, you know, everybody not buying a Mac for a couple years or whatever. Because, you know, it's, you know, OS X is kind of, in a way, it's the ultimate combination of mega corporation software and open source.
I'm still not used to it. When I have to use our computer, it's not very intuitive to me.
I was actually certified by Microsoft back in like 99 or 98 for Windows 98. So I'm pretty
awesome.
I'm certified to say that it's a piece of shit, but
well, it's not as bad as Windows Millennium.
Yeah, well, what is? but you know, I know and have known, you know, Windows back and front, and I'm also like real familiar with OS X, and I'm real familiar with Linux. So I'm pretty much I do it all.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I fix computers for a living, and first question I always ask somebody, what operating system is it running? If it's running Windows Millennium, I don't say anything other than you just need to buy a new computer.
Yeah.
Because not only is it so old that it needs to be upgraded, but you don't need to use Windows Millennium.
Yeah. It was a dud, total dud. Yeah. It was like, what did they do? It was like Windows 98 minus the stuff that actually held things together properly or something?
Yeah. It's, well, like, you don't buy the beta, or the first version of Microsoft software.
I don't buy any version of Microsoft software.
Well, their first product is never any good.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, when I say that, it's all relative to the second product, yeah, which is a little better.
You know what's also not any good? Windows Vista. I downloaded the beta from the Pirate's Bay, of course, burned it to DVD, which was a lot of trouble because I don't have a DVD burner, so I had to get somebody else to do it, and then installed it, which took a lifetime on this computer, and then what basically, and I made a little review of Windows Vista. You can, with some video clips and some funny pictures and stuff, you can get it at rawdod.com, rawdod.com. If you go into the articles section and click on the future of computing, but at any rate, it was really crappy. The installation was just as crappy as always. It even had a little message that said, like, you know, do not turn your computer off at this point, or you know, you're gonna have to restart the install from the beginning. Basically, once it was installed, the main thing that I noticed was just that, like, there was just mad bling or what have you everywhere. Like, everything was like kind of shiny and like half shadowed, like reflective plastic, kind of copying the whole Apple gel look. And that was like the only thing, was basically mad bling, and there's like a little search bar in the start menu that was kind of just awkward, and basically all the Explorer windows and stuff, when you're browsing like anything like My Documents or Images or Control Panel, instead of like being just a list of icons like it has been before, or maybe even an HTML page that's a simplified version, then you click to go to the icon list, it was just sort of like kind of a, you know, tries to be smarter kind of thing that lays stuff out, you know, in a smart way. And it actually does, like, look and probably functions better than the previous stuff. But really beyond that, there's nothing new at all. They've got some kind of web services framework called Indigo, which is just some .NET web service thing. And
yeah.
Then they've got Avalon, which is basically like even more bling. And basically what that does is, like, when they have that enabled and you need, like, you know, like 128 meg GeForce 6 or something for just to run that, when you drag Windows around, there's like a transparent border and like some kind of effects when you minimize and maximize. And that's pretty much it. The major thing that really stood out to me was what I call spinners. like, you know how those the ricers have those cars that, like, you go in and go in and then you stop at a stoplight and those rims are still spinning?
Yeah.
Well, when you have a progress bar in Windows Vista, there's, like, this shimmer that goes through that, and I call it the spinner. And even if there's no progress, that spinner is still going.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sharp.
So, I mean, overall, it's like it's almost as if they've hit like a wall. Basically, all of the exciting things that they are doing, they have a new shell that's basically sort of like an object-oriented bash or whatever that you can script with, and it's
creative.
Yeah. Well, that's the way I
bash has been around since what, like the 80s.
Well, that's just the way I describe it. It's just an object-oriented little scripting language / shell. And they're not even going to include that in Windows Vista because it's too insecure, and there's already viruses for that for the beta version or whatever. And then there's a new file system that they had that's sort of based on SQL, but that was just so out in space that they decided not to include that until the next thing. They've got another thing called Avalanche, which is a complete joke. Basically, they try to like copy BitTorrent into their own thing and say it's going to be really great and so much superior to BitTorrent or whatever, but they don't have a single, there's no implementation. It's just a bunch of design specs in some kind of crappy PowerPoint presentation that I saw. And I mean, it's like they've hit a wall or something like that. And one of the things is with Internet Explorer, I'm shocked about how popular blogs are. So all the technical guys at these big corporations are blogging, and they've got a blog called Internet Explorer Blog. It's like ieblog.com or something like that. And the thing about blogs is that they're very revealing. You know, if you have something to say that's worthwhile, then, you know, you're going to say that. And if you're just a loopy kind of guy, then you're going to loop around in your blog, and it's going to be very obvious to someone who reads it. If you look at the IE blog, it really shows you how lame some of these guys are. I mean, I was explaining this in the last show a little bit, actually, but I'll repeat myself here for my potential new listeners. One of the things that I saw on there was that they're fixing the, if you print a page that's too wide in Internet Explorer 6, then, like, it comes off of the paper, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they said there's some guy saying that he was working on that and he's fixing it, so it does some kind of resizing or does some kind of alteration so that, you know, you prints out correct. And, you know, it's a simple fix. You know, any competent programmer could probably figure that one out in, you know, a day or whatever. Thing is, what are the open source guys doing? Well, next version of Firefox, or maybe not the next version, but the one after that, I believe, everything's going to be rendered to Cairo, which is the sort of open source, it's a brand new next generation open source vector graphics drawing library. And, basically, like, it's really great, and it solves the problem of if you have a monitor that's at, like, really high density, like one of these future monitors that's, like, 300 dpi, or if you just have a really large screen or a really small screen, it can scale all these things up and down, like your text is obviously, your free type is already vectors, but all the shapes and stuff you create, all the SVGs and stuff can be scaled up and down, you know, very quickly and whatnot. It also abstracts things to the point where whether you're printing or just drawing something to the screen, it's the same exact code. So your print, since you don't have two different code paths, one for printing, one for going to the screen, your printed page is going to, you know, look exactly like what you saw on the screen. And that's like an industrial strength, you know, piece of the open source stack for doing things that's what, you know, the next Firefox or, you know, maybe one after that is going to have. And IE7 is just going to have a little hack so that, you know, hopefully your page doesn't print out, you know, an extra page just for that you're supposed to, I guess, tape to the right side of the first page or something. So I was expecting Windows Vista to at least be intimidating to some extent and be like, oh, this is really going to, you know, people are going to want to go for this and it's going to be bad because there's going to be lots of trusted computing stuff in there. But I was just blown away by how lame and crappy everything is overall. Like, it's just pathetic. And I think that, you know, by the time it comes out, whatever, like a year and a half from now, what have you, that, you know, Linux will be even further along than it is and be better. There'll still be people that are going to go out and buy Windows Vista in their ignorance. It's really, you know, if you're if you really care about the mass idiots out there running, you know, Linux on the desktop rather than Windows on the desktop, you know, it's just not too much to worry about. I think that, you know, Linux will be more valid choice. You know, yada yada. It's pathetic. The Windows Vista sucks. Dear God. But it's basically just Windows XP with more bling. That's it.
Well, a lot of things we're overlooking here is, like, companies are locked in to contracts with Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they're going to be forced to upgrade. And that's no good for anybody.
Yeah, and they're trying, I guess they're building some kind of digital rights management stuff into the next version of Office. So basically, I think what they're hoping for is that if a bunch of companies have Office, the next version of Office, and they use the digital signing and all that, nobody else, no other companies will be able to exchange documents with them unless they have that version of Office, which can handle the, you know, digital signing or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think what the deal is overall is that, you know, Microsoft's short-term outlook is just as rosy as ever or whatever. You know, it's just there's still lots of people, you know, buying Microsoft products and using them and whatever. And then, but their long-term outlook versus open source in general, I mean, their 10-year, their 15-year, maybe even 20-year outlook is nothing. There's just no way over the, I mean, cause Windows is just building layers and layers over time on, of just like, you know, on bad engineering, on bad engineering, cause it's just all monolithic and they're individual teams. And what they, one of the things I think they're not capable of and the Internet Explorer printing issue shows is that they just can't like have a they can't make some kind of standard, except in the case of a few things, maybe DirectX or something, where they can have like some kind of way of doing things that all the different programs use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that, and see, the thing is, maybe they have some of that stuff, but then it's kind of too crappy to release the API to third party developers. So the third party programs use something else. And I mean, that just shows the, where the strengths of open source may lie. And, you know, we're definitely not going to be first to market with everything, but over the long term, there's just no way you can compete with that.
Awesome.
So that's my strung out deep rant of the night.
Oh, Lordy. Well, I think it's my bedtime, buddy.
Yeah, for real. So, yeah, I got to get off the air here, too. So
call your mom.
Yeah, I got to call my mommy and get a ride because my truck is broken. Poor truckie.
We have two trucks. One of them can't get out of third gear right now. I need to work on the transmission tomorrow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lots of fun.
Well, hell yeah. Well, thanks for calling in and letting me, you know, rant and letting you respond and everything. That was really great.
Hey, thanks for letting me sit here and listen to you talk, man.
Hell yeah. I love to have a, you know, now I know at least I have a listener. Just got to get somebody to call in and just sit, you know, just listen.
Well, I'll give you like 1,000 and if you listen to my, or if I can use this MP3 on my show.
A 1,000 what? What are you talking about?
Listeners.
1,000 listeners? Oh, you have 1,000 listeners?
Yeah.
Oh, well, damn. Hello, 1,000 listeners. Please love me. My pay account, my PayPal account is, whatever.
And he's cute.
Yeah, I'm cute, too.
And he knows what he's talking about, unlike me.
Yeah, for real.
And he's a scumbag.
I'm a hate group. I hate everybody.
Well, that's how it goes sometimes. I don't hate everybody. I just hate everybody that pisses me off.
Yeah, it's pissers.
Which is pretty much everybody. All right, buddy. Well, I'm going to bed.
All right, bud.
Hey, send me this MP3, would you?
All right, hell yeah. It'll be the first. I mean, I've missed a couple shows, and now I'll have to cut this one up for you and send it to you. So it'll be a new podcast on my site, too.
Awesome.
All right. So hell yeah. Thanks for calling, man. That's
thanks
great.
For having me on, buddy.
All right. See you next
you
time, bro.
Behave.
All right.
Later, man.
Bye. All right, folks, show's over, and I'm getting out of here soon. Here's some more Front 242. It's something random. This is just some random track called Last Inkling. It's probably pretty mediocre. Here it is.